giftoflifematchingdonors.com. All right, it's been another show of TV of Human Name. Be back next week, 7 to 9, only here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
After the announcements, it'll be time for an hour of bluegrass with the Black Diamond Show here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Did you get a call or message that mentioned Social Security that made you feel threatened or scared? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, press you for personal information, or demand instant payment. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Well, if you've not been paying attention to the news for the last 20 or so hours, closer to 24 now, Vladimir Putin's Russia has started an invasion of Ukraine. And this is, I mean, listen, you know, at a certain point, when you see 190,000 troops massing at the border and you understand that it really is starting to not make sense merely as a posturing exercise, what Putin is doing, you start to consider this might be the precursor to some kind of an invasion. And almost exactly as predicted by many, Vladimir Putin creating a pretext for that invasion, using all sorts of fluffy language like peacekeeping to justify that invasion, doing it slowly. But a slow invasion is still an invasion. And that's what we have going on. Stock markets around the world, very rattled in anticipation of what may be very erratic energy prices, further supply chain delays, and all of the economic sequelae we will talk about once we get a sense of what the scope of this is going to be. But for the time being, sort of following the Georgia playbook, that's not Atlanta, Georgia, where Marjorie Taylor Greene is from. I'm talking about the country of Georgia. And possibly all of this meant to goad Ukraine into an overreaction to provide an even bigger pretext for a larger scale conflict. So let's kind of talk through what is going on. Yesterday, let me back up even. There are what we might call separatists in Ukraine. Separatist meaning they don't want to be part of Ukraine. They want to be part of Russia. Okay. Two of the regions in which there are such separatists are regions, and I'm going to do my best with the pronunciation here, the Donetsk region and the Luhansk region. These are on eastern Ukraine. You can pull it up on Google Maps and sort of take a look at where these are. So what Vladimir Putin did early yesterday, or actually it was early in the U.S., it was already kind of in the afternoon in Russia and Ukraine, is recognize those legitimately recognize those areas as independent. So Putin is saying, okay, it's part of Ukraine. Donetsk is part of Ukraine. Luhansk is part of Ukraine. But there are separatists there who, quote, really are Russian. They speak the language. They want to be part of Russia. So we're going to say those are independent regions, not Ukrainian regions. Now, if you're Ukraine, you say, wait, hold on. It's part of the country. It's Ukraine. But Putin says, no, those are independent regions. He then, hours later, after some mild sanctions were imposed by the EU and the United States on Putin for doing this, hours later, and really the sanctions were imposed on those regions rather than on what we might consider Russia proper, Putin says, hey, are the separatists in those, quote, independent areas that I've recognized, they are under attack. So we need to go in and send in peacekeeping forces into that area. It's the Putin playbook, hook, line and sinker. And there shouldn't really be anything surprising about it. This is what he was signaling for a long time. This is what various foreign policy analysts and experts were saying could be done for a long time. Some kind of pretext to then send in troops, but, you know, they call them peacekeeping. But it doesn't matter how slow it is. It doesn't matter if you say you're there to keep the peace. It is still fundamentally an invasion. We have video where you see tanks rolling down the road. This was yesterday, shortly after this announcement was made. And of course, the question now is, to what degree is this going to escalate or grow? Now, there are some people who we'll talk about in a little bit who are really going out of their way to sort of defend and normalize what Russia is doing. And you can be against American involvement and be against war and be against violence the way that I am, and still recognize that this is a classic Russian playbook, that this is an invasion, that Russia has no right to send tanks where they are sending tanks into the Donetsk and Luhansk regions. And just imagine a similar situation with Mexico or Quebec. These are not perfect analogies, but imagine that Mexico said, hey, you know what? There are people in Texas and Arizona. They look like us and they speak Spanish, our language, and they would prefer to be part of Mexico rather than the United States in Texas or Arizona. So we are recognizing these enclaves of Mexican Americans as Mexico. They are independent as far as Mexico is concerned. Well, in the U.S., we would say, yeah, but that's the United States. And I mean, they could go to Mexico. You're not stopping. If you want to welcome them, they could go. And then Mexico says, well, listen, on the basis of the independence of these separatists, we're going to send some peacekeeping troops in. Come on, guys. Nobody would go for it. Think of Quebec. Another analogy. These are not perfect analogies, but they are useful in thinking about this. In Quebec, there is a separatist movement. Imagine that that separatist movement in Quebec, Canada, said, well, we don't want to be our own country. We want to be part of the United States. Would the U.S. have any right to say, hey, those Quebec separatists, we think of them as independent because they really want to be part of us. Oh, they need us to help keep them safe. We're going to send some tanks there. Give me a break, guys. It's absolutely absurd. Now, we have video from the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, who is still kind of hedging a little bit as to the terms that are being used. Let's take a listen.
Well, the Russian troops has entered in Donbas. We consider Donbas part of Ukraine. So certainly, if the Russian troops entered into the Donbas, Ukrainian, I wouldn't say that a fully fledged invasion, but Russian troops are on the Ukrainian soil.
Yeah, they've invaded one part of Russia, is what we, I'm sorry, one part of Ukraine. The idea may be just do this and then back off. We don't know. And again, I hope that people recognize that all along I've said we can make assessments based on the signals, but we don't really know what Putin plans to do. This could just be one tiny step a day. So there's never any one day where it's like, wow, look at what happened. And then they move towards Kyiv. It's not completely clear. We are also going to have to consider what Putin's greater ideology here is. And it's sort of like the idea of pointing back to the former USSR. Ukraine is really important in Putin's mind in kind of recreating that. And we'll talk about that on the bonus show today. But also in terms of tactics, this is really kind of back to like an old war concept, which is, can you just change your country's borders by force? Since World War II and since the codification in international law that prohibits the threat or use of force against territorial integrity or political independence, we've seen few attempts to just change your country's border by force in this degree. Now, you could say, well, you know, there's a bunch of areas of the border in India where there are constant disputes and small skirmishes and little bits of land taken and given back. And it is changing the border in a way by force. In major ways, there have really only been four attempts since World War II. North Korea in 1950, trying to conquer South Korea. North Vietnam successfully conquering South Vietnam in 75. Indonesia annexing Timor-Leste in 75. And that very short-lived Iraqi annexation of Kuwait in 1990 before it was liberated in what we call the first Gulf War. So this is not super common since World War II. It will be important not only to watch what happens in Russia, but also to watch China's behavior and ambitions on the basis of what happens with Russia-Ukraine. Because if Russia gets away with this, China's interest in similar action with Taiwan may increase. So a lot at play here. And in the immediate, it's going to remain extraordinarily chaotic. I want to look at some Fox News reaction to what is taking place in the Russia-Ukraine border area, particularly Donetsk and Luhansk, where Russia has now invaded slowly, but they've invaded. Fox News immediately went to blame Biden. And it's kind of, I mean, it's sort of funny, but it's not. I half jokingly tweeted yesterday afternoon before the invasion, how long until they say Trump never would have let Putin invade Ukraine? Or are they already saying it? And it actually happened very quickly, but was hilariously kind of spoiled by Fox News's own reporters. Here are some examples. Hannity spent the vast majority of his show last night blaming Joe Biden and saying that this is Biden's weakness is what has allowed this to happen in Russia, Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. This ignores the fact that Trump was totally under the thumb of Putin, seemed enamored with Putin, as well as many other authoritarians during his presidency. This ignores that circumstances have been building for probably 20 years that relate to what is maybe even more that that are now that relate to what's taking place on the Russia-Ukrainian border. But despite Hannity spending much of his show blaming Joe Biden, when reporter Jennifer Griffin pops up, she goes, you know, Sean, actually, what's going on predates this administration. Hannity sort of upended by his own reporters.
Sean, how we got to this point is a long story, and it predates the Biden administration. It goes back and includes mistakes made by every U.S. president since the Soviet Union fell apart, which Putin has said was the worst geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century.
Uh-oh. Well, that's not the narrative that Sean Hannity has been pushing on his show. Even Peter Doocy, who some consider one of the doofiest reporters out there, Hannity was complaining, oh, Joe Biden called the lid. He's not doing anything. Even Doocy has to tell Hannity, actually, even though it's nighttime, Biden is actively coordinating a response with our allies.
And the reason that we have not seen him yet is because they're trying to get everybody on board. And he's been working the phone, trying to get a bunch of allies to sign on to a statement with him.
But Sean Hannity said Biden's doing nothing and he called the lid and this is all his fault. This is, of course, so much bigger than Biden. But the response, similarly to when Joe Biden left Afghanistan, the narrative is Biden is in the wrong. Biden is the cause of problems. Biden is the reason we don't have a solution. And the very same people who were saying Biden's going to get us into wars and Biden's bad and Trump would have been better because Trump kept us out of wars. Those very same people are saying, well, Biden should have been more aggressive to prevent this from happening. So they are going to go with this narrative no matter what. Even a Republican senator, Ron Johnson, is doing the old blame Biden. This was him last night.
But the fact of the matter is, there's not much we can do right now. What we should have done is maintain strength. You do achieve peace with strength, but that's not just military strength. It's also economic strength. And as I was saying earlier, just about every action President Biden has taken has weakened America. It's emboldened our enemies. They're very optimistic. They're very aggressive. When they sense weakness, they're going to act.
So wait a second. The same people. This is a reminder, guys, to think, what are our principles and are we standing by them? The same people who were saying we should be more friendly with Russia. We should be friends with Putin. We should be friends with Russia. We should be nice. We don't want war with Russia. Now we're saying Biden's been too weak. He hasn't shown strength. He hasn't deterred. These people should not even be part of the conversation. They are just horrible people and they don't care about anything other than criticizing Democrats. They add nothing to the conversation. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more coverage of what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. The David Pakman Show is a viewer and listener supported independent media program. A little later today, in the context of upcoming CPAC, actually, we're going to talk about what the right gets right on funding independent media and activism that the left lacks. But just remember, it's a good idea to fund some shows that you like. It doesn't have to be this one, but I would love it if you signed up at joinpakman.com. Lots of great member benefits you can read about on our website. joinpakman.com. So this is just absolutely fascinating. You may remember this Democratic congresswoman, former Democratic congresswoman named Tulsi Gabbard, who really had a faction of the left, like 2%, basically, 2% of the left was absolutely enamored with her. And she would use terms like regime change and endless wars in order to sort of convince people, I guess, that she was like maybe on the left. But the truth was, much of what she said was always reactionary. And since leaving Congress after her completely failed presidential bid, she's really become a darling of the right, appearing regularly on Fox News. She's going to be speaking at CPAC, which we'll get to a little bit later. And this is almost beyond parody. Tulsi appeared last night with Sean Hannity, and her take on the Russia-Ukraine situation was so outrageous, so unhinged, so unabashedly pro-Russia that propagandist Sean Hannity had to pump the brakes and say, hey, hold on a second. Putin has had these territorial ambitions for a very long time here. It's not just about security. Tulsi appearing and saying, oh, what Putin's doing is that he's protecting Russia. What he's doing is for their security. And Hannity has to be like, listen, Putin's had these territorial ambitions for a long time and says Ukraine's not even a country. When Hannity makes more sense than Tulsi, you know she's nuts. Take a look at this.
Ending the world that we live in and not the world that maybe some people wished existed. And that reality is Putin has made very clear all along that their security in his mind is what's at stake here. And they do not want to see
U.S. and NATO troops. I don't want to interrupt you, but Putin also said Ukraine is not a country.
Right.
And he has been saying this going back many, many years.
Right.
So this has been, these territorial ambitions have existed a long time.
I want to stay focused on the security component. They have. They go way back and they pre-exist this.
I love how she says, I want to focus on the security component. Right, because that's the component that's interesting to you. She is so unhinged that Hannity has to say, hey, Tulsi, that there's kind of like other realities here that you're not living in. And I'm going to try to pull you back towards them. Like Hannity saying your pro-Russian propaganda is a bit too much. This is when a friend would be like, Tulsi, you might want to sit this one out, when Hannity has to slow you down. And of course, it is once again a reminder of all the people that got bamboozled by Gabbard into thinking she's some kind of she's speaking truth to power, or she's on the left. She's a true progressive, the last real liberal or whatever. And listen, Hillary Clinton's not likable. And it's very popular to dislike Hillary Clinton. But when Hillary said maybe Russians are grooming Tulsi for a third party run, I don't think Hillary was literally correct. But Hillary's instincts about Tulsi were completely right. I mean, it is at the end of the day, I actually wonder, does Tulsi believe this stuff? Or does she just want attention? Is this a character that she's playing? You know, we've speculated that Candace Owens, for example, is not really this ignorant right wing loon, that it's more of a character she's developed for profit. We've wondered, did 40-year-old, then 40-year-old Dave Rubin really go from being a Bernie supporter to a Trump supporter through some kind of genuine political awakening? Or was it because of the money that came attached with saying, I've quit being on the left? I don't know. I don't know if Tulsi believes this stuff or is just saying it because it's developing this profitable character for her. I don't even know if it's profitable. But what I can tell you for sure is that when Hannity is slowing down your pro-Putin propaganda and you're supposedly on the left, you've really got to be evaluating sort of like what positions you're staking out here. And unfortunately, there are people who have sort of woken up to the scam of Tulsi Gabbard. Of that 2% of the left that fell for her, maybe 1%, you know, half of it has woken up and is like, oh, my God, that was really, really bad. And I've seen some people publicly even apologize for it. But some people are still falling for it. And if you want to see examples of it, go to my Twitter, D Pacman, look at my post about Tulsi speaking at CPAC. And then just read the comments, and you'll see the degree to which people are still unhinged here and have completely fallen for it. Really going mask off here. And I mean, good job, I guess, to Sean Hannity for shutting it down. Now, let's go from Hannity to another Fox News propagandist, Tucker Carlson. How is he reacting to the Russian invasion of Ukraine? Well, he's doing it by siding with Vladimir Putin, as Vladimir Putin quite literally was invading Ukraine yesterday. Tucker Carlson came out and said, hey, Ukraine isn't even a democracy. It's not even a democracy, implicitly justifying the Russian invasion. Here is Tucker last night.
Ukraine is not even a democracy, despite what Joe Biden endlessly claims. Ukraine is a corrupt Eastern European autocracy that has spent millions of dollars lobbying politicians in Washington and, by the way, made Joe Biden's family rich.
Okay, so Tucker isn't wrong in the sense that Ukraine is a corrupt autocracy, but Russia is even more of a corrupt autocracy. So justifying the more corrupt autocracy invading the less corrupt autocracy in this way really doesn't make any sense. And, you know, let's dig into this a little bit more. Whether we call something a democracy is very binary. The point is there are major issues in Ukraine, major issues with the rule of law, major issues with the administration of justice in Ukraine. Women's rights are kind of a disaster in Ukraine. Freedom of expression, hate crimes are out of control in Ukraine. You know, there are real serious issues in Ukraine. But number one, those issues are worse in Russia. But that's kind of whataboutism. So let's not even focus on that. It's kind of weird for Tucker to justify Russia's invasion of Ukraine over things that Russia has a worse record on. But in a sense, it's whataboutism. The real issue is Tucker implicitly invalidating Ukraine's sovereignty and saying Putin can decide what happens in Ukraine. If Putin decides that Ukraine is corrupt, Putin can invade. That's really the issue. The implied point is that Ukraine isn't even a democracy, so therefore it's okay for Putin to invade. Everything he says about Ukraine applies to Russia 10 times over. Is Russia a democracy? Is Putin not corrupt? Is there freedom of the press in Russia? Come on, come on. And the U.S. propaganda machine sails full speed ahead. And it to some degree, I feel like we don't even have like a real defense against this type of propaganda. It has pervaded, and so many people are literally rooting for Putin and Russia here and against Joe Biden, which is a very strange way of showing how America first you are, as they claim to be. Also funny is that the right wingers accusing Ukraine of not being a democracy are the people who have been accepting Trump's efforts to undermine American democracy. I mean, the number of hypocrisies and contradictions is stunning. The very same people who, despite Joe Biden winning in 2020, said, well, I don't know that he really won, and it would have been fine for Pence to overturn it. It would have been fine for the rioters to prevent the certification, to try to give Trump another opportunity. It would have been fine for states to send alternate electors, as Arizona and some other states were thinking of doing as part of the so-called Green Bay sweep. They have undermined American democracy at every opportunity and now are justifying Putin's invasion of Ukraine by saying, well, Ukraine's not really a democracy. Come on. Now, think back to the second Iraq war in 2003. In 2003, when people like me were saying, this war doesn't make any sense, we shouldn't be doing this, this is a terrible idea, Iraq didn't even have weapons of mass destruction, the entire intelligence case made for going into Iraq is bogus, these right wingers were saying, you're rooting against America, you're rooting against our troops, you're defending Saddam. And they were wrong, of course. Saddam was a bad guy, but things were relatively stable geopolitically with his presence in Iraq. But he didn't have anything to do with 9/11, and he didn't have weapons of mass destruction. We weren't rooting against the U.S. We were saying, let's not even get involved in this. Those people who said, you're rooting against the U.S., they are literally defending and supporting Putin now. And we saw clips from Tucker there are clips from Hannity. Here's one other bizarre clip from last night's Tucker Carlson show where he says he sent a letter to both the Russian and Ukrainian presidents, as well as to Congressman David Cicilline, and that Cicilline is repulsive, but hopefully he'll agree to be interviewed. Like, it's beyond parody.
So today we sent another letter to Vladimir Putin asking for an interview. We hope we get it. We also sent a message to the president of Ukraine. We would like that interview, too.
Okay.
Now, neither one of these men runs a democracy by traditional American standards. Both of them are tyrants.
True.
But they're in the news, and we would love to talk to them. An interview is hardly an endorsement. In that same spirit, we've also reached out to Congressman Cicilline's office, inviting him on this show. David Cicilline is a former mafia lawyer who represents one of our most corrupt states. He is a repulsive man. Is it immoral to talk to him? No, it's not immoral. It would be interesting. And so we hope Congressman Cicilline accepts our invitation.
I mean, it's beyond parody. The congressman is a repulsive man, and we hope that he accepts our invitation to be interviewed. We've dealt with booking what we might call hostile or adversarial guests. One of the things we never do is to say we find you repulsive in asking for the interview. I know Tucker has a whole team of people over there. I would suggest not violently, with rhetoric, but not physically, attacking the character of the people that you're trying to interview. We'll have these clips on our Instagram if you're just listening today. Find us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. This is a super interesting story that we've actually been covering for several months. There's this guy named Neil Cavuto. He's a host on Fox News, Fox Business. And Neil Cavuto had cancer, has multiple sclerosis, and recently got COVID for the second time, And he ended up in the ICU. And the interesting thing about Neil Cavuto is when he came back from his first bout with COVID, which was much less serious, he kind of admonished people in his audience for sending him messages about how they want him to die. And he kind of confronted his own audience and said, go and get the vaccine. He now has again come back and called out his own audience after he ended up very seriously ill with COVID. And he says, I was told, had I not been vaccinated, I wouldn't even be here. I'm just telling it to you the way it is. And the fact that this guy constantly has to call out his own audience for their false beliefs is really something, but good for him for doing it. Check out what he had to say yesterday.
So I wasn't really hiding anything. I just felt that I wasn't the story. The stories on this show were and are the story. It's about you. It's not about me. Just like this show, my opinions don't matter. You matter. The news matters. But this did drag on a long time for me. So you really do deserve an explanation from me. And here goes. I did get COVID again, but a far, far more serious strand, what doctors call COVID pneumonia. It landed me in intensive care for quite a while, and it really was touch and go. Some of you who wanted to put me out of my misery darn near got what you wished for. So sorry to disappoint you, but no, the vaccine didn't cause that. That grassy knoll theory has come up a lot. My very compromised immune system did. Because I've had cancer, and right now I have multiple sclerosis, I'm among the vulnerable 3%ers, or so of the population, that cannot sustain the full benefits of a vaccine. In other words, it simply doesn't last. But let me be clear. Doctors say had I not been vaccinated at all, I wouldn't be here. It provided some defense, but that is still better than no defense. Maybe not great comfort for some of you, and frankly, not great comfort for me either. This was scary. How scary? I'm talking ponderosa suddenly out of the prime rib in the middle of the buffet line scary. That's how scary. No matter, I'm not here to debate vaccinations for you. Just offer an explanation for me. I owed you that. I didn't want to become the story, but for many of you, I did. So now you know the story. Time to get back to far more important matters.
The degree, I mean, listen, if your audience is so unhinged and weaponized that this regularly you have to explain to them simple realities about vaccination and COVID, maybe this isn't the right audience for you. And of course, I'm not like a big defender of Neil Cavuto. For the most part, I find his political views just kind of mildly disgusting, in the sense of like, yeah, he's just kind of like a center right, primarily economic right winger. And I don't agree with him on much, but his audience seems absolutely horrible. And of course, we know that they are. Just think back a few months ago when he had COVID the first time. Maybe this was more like, I guess this was about 6 months ago. He shared some of the emails he got from people wishing him dead.
We've got TJ who also emails. It's clear you've lost some weight with all this stuff. Good for you. But I'm not happy with less of you. I want none of you. I want you gone, dead, kaput, finite, get it? Now take your two-bit advice, deep six it, and you. That's rather harsh, Neil. Whoa. So. But wow. I figured I'd relate that to you.
Is he trying out for the Sopranos prequel?
Jeez. Yeah, it does sound kind of like that. Okay, now we got Vince. Vince tweets, hey, guys, I bought a new car after being told it was the best. Then it blew up after I left the car lot. So now I'm begging everyone to please buy the same car. Sorry, I was just pretending to be Neil Cavuto, which I think is being a little sarcastic there in that last tweet.
You think?
A little bit. A little bit, a little bit, a little bit. Okay. A little bit. I know you love that. Here's another tweet. PolitiFact bias. Neil Cavuto has been fully vaccinated for months and has been a vocal advocate about the safety and efficacy of COVID vaccines publicly and repeatedly on air. This is not a new position for him. Which is true, Neil. This is not a new position for
him. That's kind of what we were stressing. In all seriousness, said, look, this is something from the very beginning I've been saying, that I think the better part of valor is if you... Absolutely. Having been vaccinated, it might be a good idea for you to get vaccinated. I understand those for religious, personal reasons don't want it. Yeah. But I understand also the numbers that the more who do get vaccinated, the bigger the drop in cases.
Absolutely, yeah.
Didn't fall on all receptive ears, I guess.
No, clearly not. I got another one for you. Ignis, aspiring to aspire, tweets, Cavuto is the Tigger of talking heads.
Anyway, I think you guys get it. And this has been something he's been dealing with for a while. And this was his, and again, we covered this at the time. He's been doing this for months and his audience just doesn't seem to get it. Here he is begging people, think about someone other than yourself when it comes to the vaccine.
We've lost 5 million globally to this. We've lost nearly 800,000 in the U.S. Take the political speaking points and toss them. For now, I'm begging you, toss them and think of what's good, not only for yourself, but for those around you. If you don't want to do it for yourself, if you think it's a pain in the ass, I get that.
Right.
But think of others around you. I dare say people who experience this or seen loved ones who've been affected by this or, heaven forbid, die from this are not judging the wisdom of mandates. They're wishing they got vaccinated and they didn't.
Listen. I sometimes have disagreements with like a sliver of my audience. There are people who disagree with me on my take on Russia-Ukraine. There are people who disagree with me on my take on hate crime enhancements or Cuba or Venezuela or crypto or, you know, whatever. But if the majority of my audience seemed to be at odds with the fact that I think the vaccines protect you from dying from COVID, which is what the science shows... I believe, I would be reconsidering what the hell I'm doing. Now, my situation is different because I am my own platform in the sense that Cavuto has taken his views and he works at Fox and he has the Fox audience. Okay. If he went somewhere else, he would have a different audience, presumably. I don't know how many people are super loyal to Cavuto, but he seems sort of uninspiring in that way. It's not the same for someone like me. In the sense that we're on platforms where you can just watch somebody else. And so I don't think I would end up in a situation where such a significant portion of my audience disagrees with me about something so fundamental. But these are people where nothing will change their mind at this point in time. And we know the numbers, we know the data, we know everything. Although I don't agree with Neil Cavuto politically, I'm glad he didn't die. I'm glad he was vaccinated. And I see no reason to question what the doctors told him. Which is at the level of severity that you got sick this time in the ICU, if you were not fully vaccinated, it's likely that you would have died. That seems reasonable to me. And whether this will change anybody's mind in Cavuto's audience, I have absolutely no idea. I want to look at I don't want to say this is the final kind of coda on this story, but we're kind of closing the loop on this classified documents thing that we've been covering regarding Donald Trump. Glenn Kirshner, a legal analyst, said on MSNBC that Donald Trump is facing a 5-year felony over the classified documents scandal. As you now may know, we've covered it a couple of times. Donald Trump did indeed take classified documents to Mar-a-Lago, to his house. Those were since recovered by the National Archives, and the full story has been turned over to the Justice Department for criminal investigation. Here is Glenn Kirshner appearing on MSNBC talking about the legal liability here. And remember, faces 5 years is very different than something will happen. But let's listen.
You know, Glenn, the judge's ruling says, quote, "To deny a president immunity from civil damages is no small step. The court well understands the gravity of its decision, but the alleged facts of this case are without precedent." Your reaction?
My reaction is Donald Trump may be reaching the end of his rope. I agree with Paul that there is, I think, a hesitation among prosecutors, both state and federal. Nobody wants to be the first one to charge a former president who's committed any number of crimes. I predict, Jonathan, once the first brave prosecutor who has the evidence to indict Donald Trump brings that indictment, everybody's going to want to be the second prosecutor.
So that's interesting, first and foremost, because we've been talking about this, I guess we might say, hesitation to kind of cross the Rubicon, because there's this, again, it's not a policy. It's sort of just like an unspoken agreement. I don't even know what to call it. There's this tradition of not charging American presidents, current or former. But this is a unique circumstance in that there are so many different reasons why Trump might get charged. But yet, I think Kirshner is right. Kirshner is often hyperbolic. He's made predictions that haven't come true. So, you know, take that all with a grain of salt. There is some degree to which it makes sense that no one prosecutor would want to be the first to charge a former president. Then let's move on to where he talks about the 5-year felony.
Glenn, switching topics just a little bit, how can the January 6th committee use the information that Donald Trump took classified documents to further its investigation?
Yeah, that is a 5-year felony. The National Archives has reported and referred to the Department of Justice for investigation the fact that Donald Trump removed classified national security information from the White House, and he whisked it away to Mar-a-Lago. Jonathan, if that were you or me or Paul, you can bet we'd already be indicted.
Now, that part is absolutely true for a number of the different things Trump has done. Normal people, so-called, would absolutely have been indicted already. But again, faces a 5-year felony is very different than anything is likely to happen. I would love it if the evidence points to charges and a conviction for Trump. I would love for that to happen if that's what due process determines. But I still do not believe Trump will see any jail or prison time, period. Wake me up when he actually faces some consequences. He's been dodging all sorts of legal entanglements for, I mean, listen, certainly the 5-6 years since he started running for president, but even longer than that when you consider the Trump organization. And at a sort of basic gut check level, think about the absurdity of Trump as president has the ability to declassify anything he wants. He could have just declassified the stuff that he wanted to take. He doesn't. And instead, he just takes it without declassifying it. And now he has stolen classified documents. The most logical explanation that I've seen is the documents are worth more still classified. They're worth more money. But that's a crazy explanation, but it's also the most reasonable explanation in the sense that what Trump did doesn't make any sense. Will he face consequences? I doubt it. But there are now multiple criminal and civil investigations, Georgia, New York, Justice Department looking at the documents, the stuff with the Trump Organization and the misstatement of the values of assets. It's going to be years, and maybe Trump's best bet at getting out from under all of it is to run for president in 2024 and win, which is yet another reason why we have to be prepared for him to try to do that again. All right, so now let's get to that story that I alluded to earlier. Dozens of you emailing me and saying, David, what is happening? Tulsi Gabbard is speaking at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. What the hell is going on here? Let's discuss it this weekend. Starting Thursday night, and our coverage will start Thursday as well. CPAC is happening in Florida. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is a sort of who's who of Republicans, right-wing extremists, religious conservatives, conspiracy theorists, and all of these other different aspects of the American right wing. And as a guest, they are having former Democratic Congresswoman, former Democratic presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard, who I thought was on the left. And in fact, while she was running in the Democratic primary, you had people who said, this is the only true liberal left. This is the only true leftist left, because people fell for it. She would say regime change wars and endless wars. And people would say, oh, she's so great. She's so fantastic. Notice that CPAC's promotion of Tulsi doesn't even mention that she was a Democratic presidential candidate. It doesn't say that she was a Democratic congresswoman. It just says presidential candidate. And people fell for this stuff. I didn't. And you all know that. And some of you did. And I told you day after day, you're being tricked. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. The buzzwords she would use would make leftists, some leftists, fawn all over her. She's against wars and stuff, so she's good. And I'd criticize her and I'd be called the DNC tool and a DNC plant and part of the concerted effort to take away attention from Tulsi or whatever. In fact, I did quite the opposite. Even by just talking about her, most of my audience was like, David, she's completely irrelevant to this race. Why are you even talking about her? And it was because, you know, people were telling me, some people were saying, David, she's the only real liberal. She has a much better shot of winning the Republican nomination than the Democratic nomination. And I am issuing a call right now to the people who got bamboozled by her. Just stand up and say, I got tricked. I'm going to do better next time. It's okay. Just admit it. It happens to all of us. But I also want to include something serious on this. It's not just about, we were obviously right about Tulsi. It's not, yeah, okay. There's a very good tweet that our friend Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire put out about CPAC. And he said, quote, we're all going to spend the next week mocking CPAC while ignoring the fact that we don't have the level of organization or attention. We don't have that level of organization or attention on the left. We're at a tremendous disadvantage, and that rarely gets mentioned. And Farron is exactly right. I've been screaming for a decade, they are better than us at this. They are better than us. The left barely even funds independent media, never mind something like CPAC. The right understands you've got to pour money into on-campus stuff. You've got to pour money into young professionals and getting them over to your way of thinking. You've got to have events. You've got to have people who feel like they're part of something. You've got to fund media. They fund Turning Point USA and all sorts of different right wing shows. We have almost none of it on the left. And they love to say, oh, but George Soros is pouring money into this, that, the other thing, et cetera, et cetera. The left barely funds this type of stuff in the right way. And when I talk about, hey, you know, like only half of 1% of our audience is our members on our website, I'm not just saying, hey, it'd be cool if you supported our work. I'm also saying at a certain point, we've got to fund the things that we think are important. And having a big infrastructure of right wing media and right wing activism all coming together is a really big deal for the right. It just is. There's no way around it. There's this conference, Netroots Nation, I used to go to on the left. And I think it's like the biggest thing the left has. And it's not great. You know, I have friends who still work over there. It's not great. First of all, you know how I often say to you guys, these little toxic elements of the left are very, very small. Like the right loves to say, oh, the left is all identity politics and wokesters and all this different stuff. And I explained to you, it's actually really small. Netroots, which was like the only thing we had, unfortunately overrepresented some of those toxic elements of the left. I don't even know if Netroots still exists. I know they did some online only stuff, but like if that's the best we have and the right has CPAC, Turning Point USA, all of these different think tanks, and they're so well funded, How can we hope to compete? So, yes, we are going to ridicule the things said at CPAC. I will be live with CPAC coverage Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be a huge weekend of insanity. We're going to laugh at it. It's going to be funny to some degree. But in the back of it, we have to remember they are so much better organized than we are. And unless we can get it together, even though the country keeps moving to the left, the electorate keeps moving to the left, if you look at issues, they're going to keep winning. They're going to keep winning. And we need to understand that. Marjorie Taylor Greene has appeared on conspiracy theorist Alex Jones' InfoWars, and she wants to make it known that she is not crazy. She says it bothers her to be treated like she's a crazy person. This is all starting to be beyond parody. Let's take a listen to Marjorie Taylor Greene.
And it just bothers me so much. They treat me as if I'm some kind of crazy person,
yeah. Or
like I have three horns coming out of my head. But what they don't understand is they're the ones that are crazy.
Right. Everybody else is crazy. She's not. Everything she does is completely normal. And by the way, she says this with an InfoWars sign behind her, which is a choice to do that. And she seems unable to realize that Alex Jones is crazy. It's very similar to Mike Lindell claiming to have evidence that is going to put 300 million people behind bars and then saying everybody else is crazy because they don't realize the evidence is so obvious. At a certain point, a non-crazy person, and I get that these, I'm not literally using these terms. I'm not stigmatizing mental illness, but wacky. Maybe we use wacky or disconnected from reality. At a certain point, a person who's connected to reality would realize when you say you have evidence to imprison 300 million people for their role in the 2020 election, you would realize I'm the wacky one, right? And it's the exact same thing with Marjorie Taylor Greene, just completely disconnected from her own reality, that she's saying outrageous things that no serious, sane person could possibly believe. She also is continuing to say them even as she claims to be not crazy. At an event in Texas over the weekend, which we talked about earlier in the week, she says, you know, AOC was a bartender, so she's not smart. Okay.
Where is that energy going to be created? Y'all, solar and wind. Don't you know? Come on, AOC's so much smarter than all of us. She was a bartender.
Right. Right.
You silly conservative Republicans, you probably have small businesses and things like that. Shame on you, independent people that know how to balance a checkbook.
Now, in all seriousness, people can be smart coming from all walks of life. I know people who have every type of job you could imagine, and they are smart people, okay? But is Marjorie Taylor Greene's background really anything to, number one, prove her intelligence, and number two, to put her in a position to make fun of other people's work backgrounds? Like, Marjorie Taylor Greene's dad gave her and her husband his general contracting company. Oh, okay. Wow. Well, so she ran a business. Well, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution investigated, and they determined she has had no significant presence at the company whatsoever. So she sort of didn't really run the company her dad gave her. She then started CrossFit training and ended up founding a CrossFit gym. And if we all wanted to play the game that she's playing, we could say, well, I'm sure Marjorie Taylor Greene is smart. I mean, she had a CrossFit gym, right? It's sort of like neither here nor there. But we can only be led to believe that Marjorie Taylor Greene thinks bartenders aren't intelligent, but CrossFit people are. Bartenders aren't qualified to be members of Congress, but CrossFit gym owners are. And in reality, what we need are measures like, can you think critically? Do your beliefs follow from the evidence? Do you have a normal level of empathy with which you can understand situations that other people are in? And then the last thing I'll say about this also is, you know, they claim that they are about the working people. They are against the so-called elites. Now, half the time when they mean elites, they just mean Jews, and it's an anti-Semitic cover. Like when they say globalists, you know, you guys understand that these are often coded words now. But if you're for the middle class, if you're for the working man and woman, then why would it be disqualifying that AOC was a bartender? And so, of course, their principle that they are for the little guy falls apart very quickly through their own elitism that is very clearly displayed in this way, even though Marjorie Taylor Greene has really nothing in her background that would make her feel like an elite by her own standards. And it's pathetic and it's disgusting. And we should remember their stated principles are abandoned as soon as they want to make a point against one of their political enemies. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 219-2-DAVID-P. A number of you calling in, writing in about this very question. This is from the Eggman, who asks it so eloquently.
Hey, Dave, I have a pretty basic question. Is the city of Kyiv the one that used to be called Kiev?
Yes.
Shalom.
Yes, shalom to the Eggman. It is. So here's many of you wrote to me because yesterday during our coverage of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I was talking about Kyiv. And in the comments, as well as in email voicemail, many of you said, sir, what the hell are you talking about? Isn't it Kiev? Here's the backstory. It all stems from the spelling in English, the anglicized spelling. For a very long time, the capital city of Ukraine was spelled K-I-E-V. And when you look at that, that very clearly would make most English speakers say, oh, it's Kiev. That makes sense. It's spelled K-I-E-V and it's pronounced Kiev. A couple years ago, a number of media outlets, including NPR, decided we are going to change the spelling and the pronunciation to be more in line with in Ukraine. The spelling was changed to K-Y-I-V. And when you see K-Y-I-V, most English speakers would see that and they would say, oh, that looks like Kyiv. Right. OK, so that's what happened. The idea was we've kind of anglicized it away from what it actually is in Ukraine. Let's try to match up with that more. So now it's a new spelling, K-Y-I-V, and it's a new pronunciation, Kyiv. Spell it however you want it. Say it however you want it. And Russia has started executing a slow invasion of Ukraine, as we covered earlier in the program. So appreciate the Eggman calling in about that and appreciate the opportunity to clarify. On today's bonus show, we are going to talk about the history, and the history is quite extensive, of why Russian President Vladimir Putin is obsessed with Ukraine. We will also talk about why it's Ukraine and not the Ukraine. Okay? Saying the Ukraine would be like saying, well, anyway, I'm not even going to get ahead of myself. Okay? We're going to talk about that on the bonus show. We are also going to talk about the first public option healthcare plan in the US, which is not getting the traction that we had hoped. We're going to talk about its details and we're going to talk about why. And then lastly, if you have filed your tax return and it's taking longer than usual for it to be processed, et cetera, the IRS is dealing with such a backlog and a worker shortage that they are actively trying to hire more people to actually go through that backlog of tax returns and modifications and resubmissions, et cetera. And we will talk about how long it is all expected to take. That's on today's bonus show. Sign up on my website, joinpacman.com. You'll get instant access to the bonus show. Also, a reminder, many live events upcoming in the next week. Starting Thursday evening, we will be live with CPAC from Florida, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Donald Trump expected to keynote CPAC, I guess, on Sunday afternoon. And we will be live with all of it. Monday, I will deliver my State of the Show address one day before Joe Biden. Tuesday night, will deliver his State of the Union address, which we will have live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. So I hope you will join me for many, if not all, of these live events. And in the meantime, sign up at joinpacman.com to get access to the daily bonus show for our members only.
RCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
RCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
With your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This is fundamentally a conflict between two power blocs, Russia and NATO, which are armed with enormous numbers of nuclear weapons. And so we need to consider the possibility that this conflict could escalate to a nuclear war, as unimaginable as that is to all of us.
As tension rises over Ukraine, we'll look at what the media, the U.S., Russia, and NATO are not talking about publicly, the possibility of nuclear war. We'll speak about this nightmare scenario with Dr. Ira Helfand, who works with two Nobel Peace Prize-winning anti-nuclear groups. Then to Georgia. For the first time in Georgia's history, Ahmaud Arbery's murderers have been found guilty of federal hate crimes.
What the DOJ did today, they was made to do today.
Come on!
It wasn't because of what they wanted to do.
That's fair.
They were made to do their job today.
Plus, pressure's growing on the Biden administration to fulfill a campaign promise to cancel student debt before the federal student loan payment moratorium ends in May. We'll speak to members of the debt collective.
A recent poll just reported that canceling all or a significant portion of student debt is supported by over 63% of likely voters. And yet, the president still has not delivered on his pledge to cancel student debt, despite the fact that this is a promise he can deliver on with the mere flick of a pen by signing an executive order.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States and other nations have imposed new sanctions on Russia after President Vladimir Putin ordered troops into two breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine, which the Kremlin recognizes as independent. President Biden warned Tuesday Putin is gearing up for a massive military attack on Ukraine.
This is the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, as he indicated and asked permission to be able to do from his Duma. Russia's moved supplies of blood and medical equipment into position on their border. You don't need blood unless you plan on starting a war.
U.S. sanctions will target Russian financial institutions, sovereign debt, and Russian elites. Biden said the U.S. has, quote, no intention of fighting Russia, but announced it's sending more troops and arms to Baltic countries, including F-35 fighter jets and Apache attack helicopters. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called off a planned Thursday meeting with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, calling the latest escalation a rejection of diplomacy. Other nations, including the UK, Australia, Canada, and Japan, and the European Union also announced penalties against Russia. On Tuesday, Germany halted approval of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Ukraine has called a nationwide state of emergency and told Ukrainian citizens residing in Russia to leave immediately. President Volodymyr Zelensky said earlier this week Ukraine will not cede any territory to Russia and is calling on its allies to further ramp up pressure against Putin's government. We'll be looking at the issue of nuclear war with Ira Helfand of two Nobel Peace Prize-winning organizations. in Georgia. A jury found the three white men who chased down and murdered 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery guilty of committing federal hate crimes. Arbery was killed exactly 2 years ago today, February 23rd, 2020. Travis McMichael, his father Gregory McMichael, a former police officer, and their neighbor William Bryan were also found guilty of attempted kidnapping and other charges. They now face an additional life sentence. The three already received life sentences after their murder conviction in a state trial earlier this year. Arbery's mother, Wanda Cooper Jones, welcomed the news but called out the Justice Department for initially offering her son's killers a plea deal.
What we got today, we wouldn't have gotten today if it wasn't for the fight that the family put up.